Radio.org, or ask your smart speaker to play Radio Catskill.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, is a lack of health care pushing families out of Sullivan County? That's what some residents claim at the recent Garnet Health Town Hall. We'll get the latest from the River Reporter. Election 2024. Our candidate interviews continue today. We'll hear from Paula Kay, the Democrat running for the 100th District Assembly seat in New York. That seat hasn't been vacant for over two decades. And a preview of the debate tonight between incumbent Representative Jeff Olsemer and Robin Skibber. It's at the Wallenpaupack Middle School Auditorium in Hawley. We'll chat with the Pike County League of Women Voters hosting the event. Plus, Wayne County Human Services and an artist reception for Dale Emmert at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Kristen Wright. Israel says it has thwarted an assassination plot by Iran. Meantime, Israel targeted the Iran-backed militant group Hezbollah with airstrikes in Lebanon. NPR's Ruth Sherlock has the latest.
A 72-year-old Israeli businessman is accused of getting smuggled into Iran on two occasions to discuss with intelligence officials the possibility of assassinating Israel's prime minister, its defense minister, or the head of the country's Shin Bet spy agency. Israel's defense minister has declared a new phase on the war against the Iran-backed militia Hezbollah, turning the Israeli military's focus to the country's northern border with Lebanon. Airstrikes overnight hit several villages in Lebanon, and this comes after 2 days of chaos for Lebanon, when Hezbollah radio and pagers exploded, killing 37 people and injuring almost 3,000 others. Ruth Sherlock, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
House Speaker Mike Johnson says he is disappointed the House rejected a proposal designed to avert a partial government shutdown at the end of this month. NPR's Claudia Grisales reports the Speaker is now considering his next steps.
The defeated plan included a controversial provision to prevent non-citizens from voting, which is already illegal, a plan that was being pushed by members of the hard right wing of the House Republican Party. Now, Speaker Johnson said he's mulling over a series of new ideas from members on next steps, but declined to elaborate on a new plan. Johnson told NPR he was not sure how long he'll take to consider a new proposal or give members to make their own. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer warned Johnson should reject partisan politics and make a bipartisan deal to keep the government open. Claudia Grisales, NPR News, the Capitol.
On Wall Street, stocks opened sharply higher this morning after yesterday's big interest rate cut by the Federal Reserve. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped around 500 points in early trading.
The Fed cut its benchmark interest rate by half a percentage point, and policymakers signaled that on average they expect rates to fall by another half point by the end of this year. That'll make it easier to borrow money to buy a car, build a business, or carry a balance on your credit card. Mortgage rates had already fallen in anticipation of the Fed's move, and the housing market could use the boost. Sales of existing homes in August were down 2.5% from the month before. The National Association of Realtors says the average selling price last month was nearly $417,000. The combination of high prices and high borrowing costs have been especially challenging for people trying to buy their first home. First-time buyers accounted for just 26% of last month's sales. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR News from Washington. President Biden will speak today at the Economic Club in Washington, D.C. He's expected to discuss the Federal Reserve cut and the future of the U.S. economy. Biden is also expected to tout his administration's investments in infrastructure. Almost a year after the historic approvals of the first genetic treatments for sickle cell disease, the rollout of the therapies is moving slowly. NPR's Rob Stein has details.
The new treatments give sickle cell patients genetically modified cells to compensate for a genetic defect they're born with. So far, only about 60 of the tens of thousands of patients eligible for the treatments have begun getting them. The slow rollout is due to a variety of factors, including the risks, the grueling process, and the high cost, $2 to $3 million per patient. But more hospitals are providing the treatments, more government and private insurers are paying for them, and more patients are getting treated. Rob Stein, NPR News.
Venezuela's opposition candidate Edmundo González made his first public statement since seeking political asylum in Spain. In the video message, he says the regime wants all Venezuelans to lose hope. González says he was forced to sign a letter accepting a ruling recognizing victory for President Nicolas Maduro in July's disputed presidential election. The government accused González and the opposition leader of instigating a coup and issued arrest warrants for them. Secretary of State Blinken spoke to González this week. I'm Kristen Wright, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Angie, dedicated to helping homeowners find skilled pros to get their home projects done well, from everyday repairs to major remodels. Reviews, pricing, and booking are at Angie.com or on the Angie app. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. At a recent town hall, some Sullivan County residents claimed that services at Sullivan County Garnet Health facilities are being stripped and providers are scarce. Garnet Health says there are no plans to close Sullivan County's hospital, and the hospital is actively recruiting for physicians. However, some residents describe being, quote, farmed out to receive health care at Garnet Health's Middletown campus in Orange County. Jason Dole spoke to Ruby Rayner from the River Reporter, who attended the town hall.
There was a town hall style meeting just a couple of weeks ago to discuss the state of health care in Sullivan County. It was very well attended. There were over 80, Sullivan County residents, which is far more than have attended a single legislative meeting this year. It was organized by SLAC, which is the Senior Legislative Action Committee, a group of attendees of most all of the legislative meetings for a couple of years now, in addition to Assemblywoman Aileen Gunther of New York 100. And they organized this town hall to speak with Garnet Health, one of the few and main healthcare providers in Sullivan County. So Jerry Dunleavy, the CEO of Garnet Health Medical Center Catskills and the vice president of operations for the entire Garnet Health system, was there for this forum, which was formatted in a presentation that was given by Dunleavy and then followed by him answering questions that people had submitted through Aileen Gunther's office as well as Slack. And then there was an open Q&A portion. He skipped through some of his presentation as people in the audience were eager for him to get to answering their questions that they had submitted, as well as having an open discussion at the forum itself.
We should note here that Garnet Health is a supporter of Radio Catskill. And another disclaimer is I know that one of your sources for this story was Katie Childs, and we should let folks know that she's also a trustee of Radio Catskill. But yeah, so the format was they gave a presentation, then there was this Q&A. How long did the Q&A go on for, and what were some of the discussions that people were raising?
Yeah, so the entire meeting itself was a little over 2 hours, and the Q&A took up, I'd say, a little more than half of that time. And there were a lot of different kind of concerns around the healthcare in the county. And before answering anyone's audience's questions that or any of the ones that had been previously submitted, Dunleavy was very clear that he wanted to address the claim that he has heard that the hospital in Sullivan County, the Garnet Health Harris Campus Hospital, is closing. And he unequivocally said, and I'm going to quote him here, quote, I am a growth-oriented healthcare executive. I enjoy building programs and increasing clinical services, and that's not what we plan to do in terms of any concept of closing a hospital. And he also addressed a second part of that, that he said that he had heard that if they closed the hospital, that they were going to just send everybody to Middletown. So Garnet Health has another location in Middletown. That's the that campus. And he was explaining how that campus itself has 384 beds and oftentimes has a census of over 400. In the emergency department, there is a, 40 patients being seen, another 20 patients in the waiting room, and another 40 patients waiting for admission. So Dunleavy said there really isn't the capacity at Middletown to close one hospital and force everybody to go there, and wanted to emphasize that the closure of the Catskill Hospital is not an option. And he also said that it would be very unlikely that New York State would approve the closure of that hospital. And he added that they're also, though, in the early stages of a feasibility study that will consider building or moving the physical location of the hospital to a new location. So that was the initial kind of addressments from Dunleavy about different concerns that had been circulating that he had heard around the community. And then there was kind of an opportunity for people who attended to express other questions and worries that they had about healthcare more generally in the county.
Right. But real quick on that last point, which really kind of stood out to me when I was reading the article, like in the early stages of feasibility study, consider building or moving the physical location of the hospital. Did anything in the presentation indicate why they're doing that feasibility study, meaning a change of location to facilitate better access for patients, or because the current facilities are inadequate in terms of size, or because they're inadequate in any other way?
Dunleavy mentioned that the building is quite old and that there was concerns that potentially repairing and renovating it would be more expensive than exploring an option of moving it. He also did mention in terms of laying out that there were certain things in the hospital that were far away when you transfer a patient to one part to another. And so that would be, conceivably solved by a new location. But there was no clarity beyond that.
Top of line, what were folks' main concerns?
So women's health was brought up in addition to the general lack of services in the Sullivan County Catskills location, as well as providers present. And pediatric services were also brought up, the absence of pediatric services in Sullivan County. And in kind of explaining all of that, a lot of people described having to receive care at the Orange County location and being referred there. And I think one of the attendees who articulated a couple of these issues was Katie Childs, who's a mother of two, and asked a question addressing Dunleavy. And I'm going to quote her here. And she says, quote, "What I'm not seeing is a focus on women's health. I'm not seeing a focus on pediatric health, and we have to take care of people my age. Otherwise, we're going to leave. If my child is sick, I have to drive them an hour for urgent care. And I'm emotional about that because it's scary, and I worry that this is not the right community for us." So I think this articulates a little bit of what people were trying to express, that this having to receive care because of the absence of certain services at the Catskills location in Harris, has this additional burden. There's no emergency pediatric care at the Harris location or Calicoon. And there is urgent pediatric care in Monticello, but it's not 24/7. And there are no gynecological services available through Garnet Health in Sullivan County. And at the town hall, OB services were also brought up, and somebody asked if the OB unit was closed, and Dunleavy answered, no, the OB unit is not closed. It's one of the busiest departments in our hospital, end quote. But to add on to that for some clarity, a Garnet Health employee from the birthing center in Harris said that Garnet Health does not have an OB practice. The employee said that there is one obstetrician from Sunrither Health that practices there and three from Crystal Run who use the Harris facility for deliveries, but there are no OBs available through Garnet Health. And according to that same Garnet Health employee, it has been about 6 months since Garnet Health has had an OB in Sullivan County.
That kind of touches on another major issue that's facing a lot of healthcare, staffing issues. Was staffing brought up at all?
Yes, staffing was definitely a large portion of the discussion. Dunleavy said that they're actively recruiting for vacancies in cardiology, full-time psychiatry, general surgery, and orthopedics, but he says it's challenging. He specifically said it's challenging to recruit physicians, particularly those needed for a hospital and into a rural place like Sullivan County. And he said recruitment takes time, recruitment to have one doctor takes time. And so to fill all of these positions is something that they're making an everyday effort to do. Child spoke to that recruitment issue, and she says that the lack of pediatric and OBGYN services is actually part of this recruitment problem. And she explained and kind of described, if you're trying to attract a young doctor that has children of their own or wants to build a family, they're going to think of that very first question of concern of, is there basic services in this community that I'm considering moving to? So she says that attracting young professionals that are going to be able to maintain this pool of qualified people, unless you can do that, then we're just going to have an aging population. And then another important note on staffing was from Erica Callender, a union representative for 1199 SEIU at Garnet Health Harris's campus, who told the River Reporter that they have had a few people who were hired who applied for jobs at the Catskill location, but for some reason they were routed to Middletown. And she says, why? We don't know. And she also said that she has people who are applying to certain positions and not being called.
Is money a challenge in any of this? That's one thing I didn't hear at all anything about in that section. I would have thought that, you know, funding would affect hiring. Was that brought up at all?
No, that wasn't any of the aspect of the discussion in terms of whether or not they would choose to build or move the hospital to a new building. Dunleavy said would be totally based on, you know, grants received and financials. But in terms of staffing, it wasn't something that was referred to. Somebody did ask in terms of the money that has been invested total by Garnet Health in both the Orange County Middletown location as
well.
Well,
I'm Julie Pizzal. We're at the they have the election, and we're with the Kiwanis Club, and we have our soup festival.
What's a soup festival?
The space has financially 70% has been in the Middletown campus, and the remainder in the Sullivan County Garnet Health location.
Okay, coming out of this big meeting, what are the next steps?
So Dunleavy said that he's willing to have more conversations and hopes that perhaps smaller conversations with community stakeholders might be more productive to addressing some of the concerns that were brought up. And a lot of a couple of different people who were in attendance suggested that this, you know, there was so much different concern brought up in just one meeting with just, you know, one group of people that there's definitely more to be talked about. So there seemed to be engagement on both sides to continue this conversation, and the River Reporter will continue to be reporting on the subject.
And we'll continue to bring you that information as well. Apologies for that audio impairment during this segment. We reached out to Garnet Health, and they have not formulated their next steps for continuing conversations, but we will certainly keep you posted when they do and bring you that information here on Radio Catskill. And next, we'll bring you more of our election 2024 coverage. We'll speak to the Democratic candidate for New York's 100th Assembly District, and we'll get a preview of the debate tonight for Pennsylvania's 139th. That's on Radio Catskill right after this.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl, and the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
I'm Callison Stratton, a singer-songwriter, public historian, and host of Liberation Station here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Liberation Station is a show that highlights the work of female and femme-presenting performers across genre and time. It's my little way of balancing the scales of representation on the radio. Join me for Liberation Station every Saturday evening at 7 p.m. only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill, and we're keeping you connected this election season. We're going to have a preview of the debate for the 139th Pennsylvania Legislative District that's happening tonight. That's in just a few minutes. But first, our series of local candidate interviews continues right now. Incumbent Aileen Gunther has chosen not to seek re-election in New York's 100th Assembly District, opening the seat to new candidates from both parties for the first time in more than two decades. Yesterday, we heard from Republican candidate Lou Ingracia, and now we get to meet candidate for the candidate for the Democrats, Paula Kaye. Jason Dole spoke to her in our Liberty studios earlier this month.
We're joined in the studio by Paula Kaye, candidate for New York Assembly's 100th District. Kay is an experienced lawyer who has served on various town and planning boards throughout Sullivan County for many years, also served as Aileen Gunther's first legislative director. She currently resides in Rock Hill, New York. Welcome to the program and welcome to the studio, Paula.
Hey, Jason. It is a privilege to be here. Thank you for the wonderful tour, the great facilities here at WJFF, and we hope great things for the future of the station.
Well, thank you. I mentioned briefly like a total thumbnail background for you, but you want to give share a bit more about your background and for the listener and also what inspired you to run for assembly?
Certainly. So my husband and I moved up here almost 30 years ago, and immediately I got involved with the town of Thompson and with Assemblymember Jake Gunther. I have been the town of Thompson attorney, deputy town attorney for over 20 years, and also the town attorney for the town of Fallsburg. I handle planning and zoning and municipal matters, worked with Aileen Gunther, as you mentioned, as her legislative director, and also represent numerous EMS, fire departments, and community organizations, as well as having a private real estate practice. We raised our two children, Jack and Jordan, here in Rock Hill, where we have lived. And they both graduated from Monticello High School. And Jonathan and I are so proud to call Sullivan County and the 100th Assembly District our home.
Well, that's great. Well, so, you know, and with all of that, you know, Thompson deputy town attorney for 20 years, serving with various organizations. What experience from your time in local service is going to inform your approach to state level politics?
So it's so important to listen, right? It's important to listen to people all over the 100th district. And my goal as assembly member is to represent each and every person, each and all organizations throughout the 100th assembly district. And in my roles in the town of Thompson, the town of Fallsburg, and representing the community groups and EMS and fire organizations, I've certainly learned a lot about the needs of this county and of Orange County, the town of Walk Hill, the city of Middletown. But I've also been doing a real listening tour for the past 7 months, talking to healthcare workers, nurses, doctors, teachers, students, administrators, people throughout the district to really get a sense of what's going on throughout this district. You know, Sullivan County, Walk Hill, Middletown are all very unique, have all very unique personalities and needs. We have the river towns, we have the villages, we have the city of Middletown, and all of them have been so well served by both Jake and Aileen over the last 30 years in terms of both legislation and grants, and it is so important to continue that.
So given all that, what would you say are the most pressing issues facing folks in these different communities in the 100th Assembly District right now?
So first and foremost, health care. We need access to quality health care. And by access, there are pockets of our community that do not have access to health care because there are folks who just simply do not have cars. Our health care services, especially in Sullivan County, we have fewer providers, partially because of the medical reimbursement rate in Sullivan County is lower than surrounding counties. We're treated as upstate rather than downstate. And so Our healthcare workers deserve to have enough funds to feed their families. That is really important. So if you're going to make more money going a little bit south, you're going to work maybe in Orange County instead of in Sullivan County. We need to help our hospital to recruit new folks to work at the hospital. We need to help our healthcare providers, and the way to do that is to increase our reimbursement rate. And that's something that I know Aileen has been working on, and there have been incremental changes. We need to continue it and do more. We also need to access to transportation for healthcare is paramount. In the city of Middletown, I was talking to a group of seniors. One of their problems, they can get access to doctors in the city of Middletown or Walk Hill, but a lot of those providers have moved outside of the city of Middletown or Walk Hill to Monroe, some to actually Rock Hill, and some further away. And the access to transportation is only within Middletown or Walk Hill. So these seniors now can't see the doctors that they've been seeing for years. We've got to fix it, and I will fight for them.
Another big issue in our area is housing, affordability of housing. It's a major concern across New York State, especially here in our region. How would you address the housing crisis in this district?
That's a great question, Jason, and thank you for that. It's all about collaboration, and I have promised from day one that I will work across the aisle and I will work with all of my partners to put together a housing plan. We have to work with our large employers. We have to work with developers. We have to figure out tax incentives similar to what the New York City and some of the larger cities like Buffalo get. We need to bring that here. We all need to sit down at a table and work together to figure out a way to make housing for the people who live here. And I mean kids coming back from college who can't afford quality housing here. I mean our seniors and our working families. It is not right that people are spending months and months and months looking for housing and have the inability to find quality, safe housing in the 100th district.
Now, what steps would you take in terms of economic growth and job creation, especially in a district that has so much rural areas?
Well, we need to work with our existing job creators, such as the partnership in Orange County, the partnership in Sullivan County, and the IDA in both counties. I think they're doing a great job to promote bringing in new businesses. And sometimes the question becomes when a business comes to a planning board, new growth business comes to a planning board, there's often pushback. And it is so important to have home rule in this state. So even though you may have a quality business with great jobs coming in, it is still up to the local planning board to make the determination, which they do by following the law of the municipality, as to whether or not that business belongs where it's being promoted.
Do you feel like any changes need to happen at that level of the IDAs or like the Partnership for Economic Development in Sullivan County or in Orange? Like, do they need to be doing anything different to address the job growth?
Well, I do believe that we could, again, going back to housing, because housing does promote job growth if we have more housing for people who live here or people who want to live here. I think that there may be a discussion to be had about providing economic incentives through the IDA for housing.
Another key issue for voters is the environment. And what are your policies and viewpoints towards environmental quality in the 100th district?
So growth is important, but growth is also important with an eye on the environment, air quality, water quality, protecting our farms. These are all things we have to look at. It's all a balancing act. We need growth and housing where we have the infrastructure that's already existing. We need to be careful about maintaining some of our rural areas outside of our villages and our cities, and we need to protect the farmers every chance we can.
And, you know, along those lines, the number one and two industries, at least in Sullivan County, still are tourism, and the environment plays into that tourism appeal. And then agriculture is number two. So mm-hmm. it's the environment's part of the economics here as well.
Oh, absolutely. We love to see tourists come here and utilize our rivers and float down. I love floating down the Neversink. Sometimes it's a little hard to get out, but I love floating down the Neversink. Coming to the Harvest Festival at Bethel Woods, going to the farm markets all summer and choosing our fresh products from local farmers. We are so lucky to have that.
So what's your stance on public safety? And do you have any ideas about improving public safety in the justice system in your district?
Yes, sir. So bail reform is not done. The state enacted bail reform, as far as I'm concerned, it's not working. We need to go back to the table. We need to fix it. Bail reform should be judges' discretion. The judges need to have the discretion to decide whether a alleged perpetrator is dangerous to our community. It's not a money issue. You know, if there's two people who allegedly do a crime, it shouldn't be about who has the money to bail themselves out. It should be who is potentially dangerous. If they're both dangerous, they both spend the night in jail. If the judge determines, and again, it's the judge who's the expert, who's the professional, if the judge determines that they are not a threat to society, that's a different story. But we need to go back to the table, bring the discretion back to the judges, back to the professionals. And again, it's not about money. And that's why four PBAs have endorsed me in this race, because they know that I understand the needs of this community in regard to public safety.
Assemblywoman Aileen Gunther represented this area for more than 20 years. And before that, her husband, Jake Gunther, represented it for about 10 years. So next year, 2025, is going to be the first time in more than three decades that someone not named Gunther will be representing us in this district. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that the most important thing here is that both Jake and Aileen have delivered for our district, and that I'm the only candidate who will continue to do so. And I have history both with the state and with both Jake and Aileen. I worked for Jake. That was one of the first things I did when I moved to this county. I was his director of special projects and then helped Aileen out with her campaign and went on to be her first legislative director. So there's continuity here. I think it's really important. It's important for the district as a whole to continue the good work that Jake and Aileen have done to bring back to this district, to bring back to our fire companies, to bring back for mental health initiatives, to bring back for community organizations, and I will do that.
You know, and as you mentioned, like working with the state, and earlier you brought an interesting angle to where we are at with healthcare, just in the way that this region is viewed, both like on paper and then perhaps in people's minds as well. And I'm just mm-hmm. wondering, in your experience working here in the region and then working with the state in whatever capacity you have, what is it about, what would you say this area's relationship is to the state? And what is it that the state may not be getting about this area?
Well, specifically Sullivan County, I think one of our issues is we do not have a county executive. And I think that it is time. I think a county executive could be our very biggest cheerleader. And I'm talking actually as the wife of a former county manager. Okay. And he did an amazing job. But we need a county executive to take us to the next level. And we need a county executive who can interface with the state. Just like all of the districts to the south and north can do on behalf of their constituents.
That's a way, would it be then like Sullivan County has more of a seat at the table by yes. having a focal person like that?
Absolutely.
So the last question I got for you is what would you tell voters? Why should they vote for you over your opponent?
Well, thank you. Again, I am the only candidate who will be able to continue the wonderful legacy of Jake and Aileen Gunther for over the past 30 years and continue to bring back to this district. And I'm the only candidate who will have a seat at the table to write, produce, and support legislation to bring back money to bring back grants, to help our first responders, and to really work with the people of the 100th Assembly District.
And is there anything else that you wanted to talk about that we didn't get to?
I think we've pretty much hit it. And I really, again, appreciate you having me here and also looking at this amazing facility that you have. And again, I wish JFF only the best.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming out to see it and for talking to our listeners.
Thank you so much, Jason.
Jason Dole speaking to Democrat Paula Kaye, who is running against Republican Lou Ingrassia Jr. for New York State's 100th Assembly District. They'll be debating on a Sunday morning at 10 on Catskill News Talk, and Mid-Hudson News are hosting that. We'll be bringing you a rebroadcast of that debate next week, and we'll let you know when you can hear that here on Radio Catskill. In the meantime, a debate tonight for the 139th Pennsylvania Legislative District is happening between incumbent Representative Jeff Ulsimer, the Republican, and Robin Skiver, the Democrat, at the Wallenpaupack Middle School Auditorium in Hawley. The League of Women Voters of Pike County is hosting it. And Liz Forrest from the League of Women Voters joins us now for a preview. Liz, good morning.
Good morning to you.
And are you ready for this one tonight?
We are. We're very excited about it. A lot of work has gone into it, and we certainly do appreciate the participation of both candidates, because as far as we know, this is the first debate, or at least televised debate, that's ever taken place involving candidates for the 139th Pennsylvania Legislative District.
Yeah, and let's remind folks, this is for the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, the state House representatives in the General Assembly. And
correct,
this is also that seat that was vacated by Republican Joseph Adams back in February when he resigned. So there was that special election in April, which was won by Republican Jeff Ulsimer. So he's only been in the seat for a minute, and now they're both vying for the continued term, right?
That is correct. This will be a brand. Well, it's not. He will continue anyway until January 1st, which is what the special election decided. But this election in November is for the next 2 years, which would start in January.
And the 139th district is covering off Pike County, Wayne County, and includes a lot of the areas in our listening area. Folks very interested in this. What are the stakes here? Could this determine balance of power in the House of Representatives in Pennsylvania?
Well, it's very close as far as the balance of power in the House. I think it's one seat difference right now. So, yes, it could, as well as, I don't know, two or three handfuls of other seats elsewhere. But this is a heavily Republican district and always has been, really. But things are somewhat changing in Pike and Wayne County because there are a lot of people that have moved in to live full time where it had been weekends and summers. It's a little bit different now.
The League of Women Voters is putting this on. The moderator for the evening will be Amy Weidstrom, the executive director of the League of Women Voters of the whole state of Pennsylvania, the League in Pike
that
County.
Is correct. Yeah. Yeah, the state is paying attention.
Yeah.
And it's not just the state league. I think everyone is paying attention.
Absolutely.
There are, and the voters of the district are paying attention. As you know, we had put out a request for people to submit questions ahead of time, because we do like to moderate them. You know, we don't want to have questions that come in that are just simply, you know, wedge issues because somebody filled the auditorium with folks, you know, with a one issue thing. And oh boy, we have heard from the voters and we got an education on a lot of their concerns.
What were folks saying? What's kind of bubbling to the top there?
Well, emergency services, which is always a problem in Pennsylvania because they're underfunded, even though there has been a boost in funding in the rural areas, it's still a problem. Because none of us in the League of Women Voters are farmers, We got a question quite recently about what are you going to do to help the farmers in the 139th, and I thought, well, darn, I don't know. I'd like to know what they want to do about that, too. We have questions that came in from not just the general public, but league members. And we are going to have a lot of press there tonight as well. So I imagine they're going to have some issues. So there's quite the variety of, you know, what can they do to help get more funding for spring for spongy moths, which are eating our hardwoods here by the mouthful. Mm-hmm. And that's a very important industry, not just because of the forestry part of it, but because tourists come to see the leaves. If there aren't leaves to change in October, that makes a difference as well. So I mean, it's been a wide range of things, even questions on compensation for jury duty.
It sounds like there are a lot of issues that are specifically relevant to Pike and Wayne counties and Pennsylvania. So it sounds like folks were listening and submitting some good questions. This is tonight at 7, promptly at 7 at the Wallenpaupack Middle School Auditorium in Hawley. Can the general public still attend?
There are very few seats left that haven't been spoken for, but it's first come, first serve, whatever is left. Because you know how this goes. People will reserve seats and then not show up. Mm-hmm. So if they really would like to come out, we will try to accommodate them. We ask that anybody who is coming to please be in their seat by 6:55, as it will be a live broadcast, and we need to go right at 7 o'clock.
And that live broadcast is with BRC TV 13. They're carrying it live. It'll be on their YouTube page. And we here at Radio Catskill will rebroadcast that debate for our listeners tomorrow morning at 11. That is the debate between incumbent Representative Jeff Ulsimer, the Republican, and Robin Skibber, the Democrat, vying for the permanent seat for the, at least for the next 2 years, in Pennsylvania's 139th Pennsylvania Legislative District. That debate being put on by the League of Women Voters in Pike County. And we've been talking to Liz Forrest from the League. Liz, have a great debate. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll learn about a job fair coming up in a few weeks in Wayne County and how you can get prepared. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Furniture Restore, located on Main Street in Jeffersonville, specializing in antique and vintage furniture, rugs, art, and lighting, because buying well-made and pre-owned is a better choice for the planet. Online at therestorejville.com. And from The River Reporter, the community newspaper serving four counties along the Delaware River in Pennsylvania and New York, riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you.
Hi, this is Jeff, your host on Radio Catskill's show, Electric Mountain. I'll be playing a choice selection of house, techno, electro, and a whole lot more. And every week, I'll feature a guest DJ spinning a continuous set, bringing their unique style. Come dance with us on Electric Mountain, each and every Saturday night, 12 to 2, exclusively done on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every Thursday, we check in with Wayne County to find out what's going on, and they're hosting a job fair October 2nd. Here to tell us more about it and how to plan for a job search are Paula Wehrman, who is the Human Resources Analyst for Wayne County Human Services Division, as well as Stephanie Bryant, who's a caseworker manager. Good morning.
Good morning.
Paula, can you tell us a little bit more about your mission of human services there in Wayne County? There are a lot of departments that fall under that division, right?
Yes, yes. So our main mission in Wayne County Human Services is to serve and strengthen the families and children of Wayne County. We offer them accessible social services, trying to help promote independence and contribute to the quality of life in their lives and in our community.
And what is something that you have there, which I found very interesting? It's a 24/7 info and referral service called, it's a 211 number. What is that?
So it's a free and confidential service that is provided, and it connects people in need with different resources and services within the community to help them out with different things, things like child care services, employment services. If you're a veteran, of veteran services, if you're having issues or need help with utility payment assistance, things like that. So it's a great service. And it can also provide services and to the different departments that we have, too, if need help with behavioral health issues or children and youth services, things like that. And they will put them to the right person to talk with.
We mentioned the job fair coming up on October 2nd. You guys are also helping to focus folks on understanding how to plan for a job search. Why is it important for folks to consider like long-term goals and what their, you know, aspirations are when they're planning a job search?
Well, I've been in human resources for 20 plus years, not just with the county. So you need to have a clear direction for a career, because it helps you make informed decisions about different opportunities that are out there, keeps you motivated. It can ensure the jobs that you are pursuing are in line with your career vision. I tell people that I talk to, particularly my children who are just coming out of college and looking at careers now, you know, it helps you focus and gives you direction. It helps with your decision making. It boosts your motivation. It helps when you're interviewing. It prepares you for it. So discussing different career goals, it can increase your job satisfaction, doing something that you enjoy. And also it can identify different skills and development areas for you, too.
And at the Human Services Job Fair, October 2nd, will that be part of what folks can expect? Can they learn how to develop a strategic job search plan? Or what are some of the other things they can expect?
Some of the things that they can expect is we'll be allowing them to apply right online if they haven't applied previously to the open positions that we have. We'll have informational areas, particularly for our behavioral health and our children and youth departments, what they are looking for, what types of jobs, and, you know, just different areas of how they can develop what is needed in the community, see if their interest is there. Stephanie actually has a lot of information regarding children and youth and what they're looking for as well.
I was going to say, Stephanie, we haven't heard from you.
Yeah, so I'm here just to promote one of the human service departments that are going to be present at the job fair on the 2nd. And really for children, youth, and the key seekers we're looking for is anyone that's interested in making a difference in the community for families and children, being able to advocate for those most vulnerable populations, and really getting a personal fulfillment in a very challenging but deeply meaningful work in the community. So our caseworkers are the ones that are handling all our cases and calls that come into us and are out working in the field and working in the office. So it's just a really good opportunity to start a career if you're interested in criminal justice, psychology, or even social work. And within our field, we do special programming where you can get your master's for free after working for 2 years with us. And we take on interns in their bachelor's department that are in social work, and that tuition gets paid for a year while they owe the time back. So we have a lot of areas for growth and development, as well as really making a difference. So we're really one of the agencies there on the 2nd.
And where can folks get more information about the job fair, hours, location, all that stuff?
Okay, they can contact statejobs@pa.gov, or they can contact me directly at 570-253-4262.
All right. We've been speaking with Paula Wehrman from Wayne County Human Services Division, as well as Stephanie Bryant, who's a caseworker and a caseworker manager. Thank you both. And we will look for more information about the Human Services Division as we continue here at Radio Catskill. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a great day.
All right, we'll take a break when we come back. A new art exhibit opening up at Delaware Valley Arts Alliance this weekend. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi will have more. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, it's terrific baking with the 14-time cookbook author Dory Greenspan. And all the best things to do with grains and beans with the chef, farmer, author Abra Behrens. Coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. Dale Emmert ventured into bookmaking during COVID isolation. What began as a way to enhance teaching on Zoom evolved into a deep appreciation for the art of creating books. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to him about his new artistic journey.
Good morning, Dale, and welcome to Radio Chatskill. How are you today?
Fine. Enjoying this beautiful September, like summer weather.
Yes, beautiful. And not too hot, not too cool. Sun is shining.
It is perfect.
And yes, on this beautiful week, you have an exhibit coming up at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance on Saturday, the 21st. There'll be an opening reception from 4 to 6, and the exhibit will run through October 27th. And the name of the exhibit is Imperfect Books. So I have to ask, what are imperfect books?
Okay. In getting involved in making books, there's always something that goes wrong with the mechanics of the bookmaking. And so that little title kind of came into my mind. And I thought that imperfect books is a kind of wonderful metaphor, you know, of maybe trying to maintain a sense of humor in the crafting of an object. I don't think any object is ever perfect. There's a whole perfect binding choice you can make in producing a book. So this is a way to kind of feel a little bit, it's maybe asking permission more of myself to just proceed. You know, it's an imperfect book. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. So, it opened up a kind of self-acceptance or vulnerability.
And it's also an artist book, correct?
Yes, they are all artist books. They are not, they're all unique. There's not as though I have published any of them. So they are objects, and there's a whole world of artist books that has existed since, you know, really the beginning of making books. So I am not really interested in publishing some of these, although, you know, that would be an interesting venture. But these are all unique, one-of-a-kind object books under that umbrella of artist books.
And are they made to be touched by the viewer?
Well, some of them, definitely. In fact, some of them were made so that you can hear the rustling or the turning of the page. There's this kind of wonderful feeling of flopping paper or rustling paper that I have, and I want somebody's arm to be arcing through the turning of some of the books. And some of them have to be, I don't think I'll exhibit them in the box, but I have a series of little books in boxes that if you were to open them, you have to pull the book out of the box. I think I'll be showing them pulled out of the box so one can see them. But there's a sort of engagement with the books. Some of the books I will sort of keep in a tureen so that they will not be handled, but some of them definitely need to be handled. So I'm looking forward to installing the show and what books are static and what books will encourage people to move them.
And I noticed also that you began this bookmaking project during COVID. And it's interesting because lately I have been interviewing a lot of artists of various stripes and colors that created work during COVID. So you're among a group now that is opening up their art to the world.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, reason I'm marking it as a, you know, something started during COVID. I was running an art department and teaching full time remotely from up here to New York City. And we were, like every other person, learning. We were on the front line, certainly as educators. How do you communicate? How do you teach in this way that we have never, ever thought of teaching before? My school hadn't. So I thought, well, let me see if I can take some online courses to see if I can pick up some tips and learn how to teach. So Center for Book Arts is a place I had always wanted to take classes and never could kind of get to by the end of my day and where I live, the commute. So I realized it was teaching me how to teach. And then I think I had for many, many, many years, I think since I was in high school or even before, always had an ambition to make a book. But I kept thinking I have nothing to say. I couldn't write it. It would be sad. You know, I had these blocks. So the online courses in different places, but primarily Center for Book Arts was like a tutorial in teaching. And they were learning too. So it was a forgivable moment. And yet it kind of started a way to see the world, which I started to see things in terms of the frame of a book. And I just haven't been able to stop.
Well, lucky for us that we'll be able to see these wonderful creations of yours and be able to touch them as well. And that will be on Saturday, September 21st from 4 to 6. And Margaret Inga Urias will also be exhibiting, and her exhibit is called Of Clouds and Ash. And Erica Hart will be showing right next door, so to speak, at the Tess's pop-up gallery. So there'll be a lot going on in Narrowsburg.
There's also, I think, going to be an installation in the window as well. I don't know the woman I'm sharing the time with, the DVAA, but her work is absolutely incredible. Her scale is so ambitious, and I'm looking forward to speaking with her, meeting her. So it's going to be nice time on the main street. So.
It will be. And folks can get more information by going to the website of the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance.org. And Dale, do you have a website?
Yes, I do. It's my name, DaleMart.com, www.
E-M-M-A-R-T?
Yes.
Okay.
M-Art. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dale, and I look forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Thank you. And this is very pleased to be interviewed by you and love your voice and your work. So.
Okay. Thank you.
And thanks to Valerie Manzi for that report. And apologies for misgendering Dale Emmert in the introduction. That'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. We'll see you here tomorrow at 10. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale. Dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
How we make sense of the news and the world keeps changing. Who to trust and what's real are other moving targets. Let On the Media be your guide.
Saturday afternoon at 4.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill. Today's weather, warmer with times of clouds and sun, high 83, turning cloudy tonight, low 55. Fog will affect the area from late tomorrow night to Saturday morning. Cloudy tomorrow, high 76. Cooler Saturday, high 72.